Money Talk. This is Akashvani. In the program Money Talk, now we bring you a discussion on Niti Aayog's report on India's blue economy. The participants are Lakshmi Devi, senior journalist, and Lalima Aneja Dang, anchor.
Recently, Niti Aayog released a report on India's blue economy, strategy for harnessing deep sea and offshore fisheries. This report was formally launched by Professor Ramesh Chand, member Agriculture Niti Aayog, and Sri BVR Subramaniam, CEO Niti Aayog. The Honorable Prime Minister Sri Narendra Modi also has a vision on India's blue economy.
Visakhapatnam aur Andhra Pradesh ke coast sainkdon barson se Bharat ke trade ka gateway rahe hain. Aaj bhi Visakhapatnam का उतना ही महत्व है. हम समुद्र से जुड़ी अपॉर्चुनिटी के पूरे इस्तेमाल के लिए ब्लू इकोनॉमी को मिशन मोड में बढ़ावा दे रहे हैं.
फॉर मोर ऑन इंडियाज ब्लू इकोनॉमी वी आर नाउ जॉइंड बाय मिस लक्ष्मी देवी, सीनियर जर्नलिस्ट. वेलकम लक्ष्मी जी टू आकाशवाणी स्टूडियो.
थैंक यू फॉर हैविंग मी हियर.
लक्ष्मी जी, व्हाट इज द सिग्निफिकेंस ऑफ दिस रिपोर्ट व्हिच इज ऑन द ब्लू इकोनॉमी दैट इज ऑन द फिशरीज ऑफ आवर कंट्री?
It's a landmark policy document that lays out a strategic roadmap to transform India's underexploited deep sea and offshore fisheries sector into a driver for economic growth, food security and environment sustainability. So it's very significant because this report surveys India's immense marine potential, that's especially in exclusive economic zone of over 2 million square kilometers with deep waters beyond the continental shelf. And while India is already the world's second largest fish producer, its deep sea fisheries are largely untapped. So that's why this report is important, because this gives a roadmap how to harness this untapped potential. And because currently only a handful of registered high sea fishing vessels compared to thousands operated by neighboring countries are used in this particular segment. So the report also estimates that deep sea resource potential is 7.16 million ton per year. For a country like India, it can boost seafood exports, generate employment, reduce pressure on coastal stocks, and contribute substantially to the livelihood of millions dependent on coastal economies.
Well, India is the second largest fish-producing country in the world, accounting for 8% of global production. We have a huge coastline, undoubtedly. We are surrounded by sea and ocean on all the three sides. How exactly would one differentiate between offshore and deep-sea fisheries for a common person?
See, India's coastline has 11,098.81 kilometer. It covers 9 maritime states and 4 union territories. It's a big. And Gujarat has the longest mainland coastline, followed by Tamil Nadu, Andhra Pradesh and West Bengal. So the terms like offshore fishing and deep sea fishing are often used interchangeably, but they do have subtle differences, primarily related to location, water depth, duration and type of experience. Offshore fishing generally refers to the fishing that takes place a few miles from the shore, typically within the sight of land or up to around 20 to 30 miles out. It usually involves waters with depths ranging from few hundred feet to just over 1,000 feet. So here, like the popular techniques used for fishing purposes, trawling, bottom fishing, drift fishing. Boats used for offshore fishing can vary from small light tackle vessels to large sport fishing boats. So for fishing in this kind of area, trips are often day long, but can be shorter or longer depending on the location and condition. But when it comes to deep sea fishing, it usually refers to fishing in much deeper waters farther offshore, often where the ocean floor drops drastically and is measured in thousands of feet depth. So these excursions are farther from shore, sometimes 30 to 50 miles or more, and the trips could be longer than a day and sometimes full days or multiple days. So deep sea fishing generally involves larger, more robust boats equipped with advanced technology for navigation and fish detection, targeting different species of fishes like tuna, swordfish. So the experience is more adventurous and can require specialized gear and preparation. These are the difference. They are interchangeably used, but there is difference.
There is difference.
Yes.
And we often hear, Lakshmiji, that some are fishermen, they accidentally cross the border and went into the waters of the neighboring country, and then they get, neighboring country might arrest them. And then there is an exchange of fishermen taking place. All those things happen. So when here in the policy itself, we are talking about both deep sea fishing and offshore fishing, this also means that we must have more agreements and more fine-tuned agreements with the neighboring countries to protect our fishermen at the grassroots level?
Yeah, definitely. Exploiting deep sea fisheries sustainably and effectively requires more agreements and enhanced cooperation with neighboring countries to protect fishermen, manage shared resources and combat illegal fishing in the region. So India's deep sea fishing resources are primarily within this exclusive economic zone, but for broader access, cooperation through regional fisheries agreements and maritime boundary understanding is essential. Mm-hmm. So for example, like India has limited capacity to monitor and enforce fishing activities in EEZ. It doesn't have a lot of monitoring thing. So cooperation with neighboring countries through coordinated patrols and information sharing is crucial to avoid illegal, unreported and unregulated fishing and conflicts such as those seen in Palk Bay area with Sri Lanka. Mm. So, and also these agreements help protect fishermen from arrest or conflicts, as you mentioned, caused by crossing perceived maritime. At times you can't really make out the maritime border. Regional cooperation improves monitoring via data and surveillance sharing. Both the countries can share the data and surveillance, allowing joint operations to combat illegal fishing and protect resources sustainably.
We have about 30 million livelihoods which are dependent on the fisheries industry. Now, once this report has come out on India's blue economy strategy for harnessing deep sea and offshore fisheries, it says strategy. Will this also help more people, you know, gain livelihoods on the ground level in the coastal areas and help in policy making?
Definitely. So India's coastal line are overexploited, with roughly 30% of marine fish stocks facing overfishing. You need to protect the nature, right? You need to balance
right.
people. You need to leave certain fish to survive and regenerate.
Right.
You can't overfish. And this is because of many factors like indiscriminate trawling, juvenile fishing, illegal fishing activities. Because of this, the coastal line that we have, it is overexploited. So this overexploitation definitely threatens the livelihood of about 28 to 30 million fishermen that we have in our country. They are dependent on coastal fishing for their survival. Imagine the 9 coastal states
yes.
we have.
Yes.
And in the coastal line, around 28 to 30 million are dependent for their survival. And it's also not only for the livelihood and also to protect the marine biodiversity and ecosystems health.
Correct.
So this is very important. So with coastal fisheries overexploited, that's where this developing deep sea and offshore fisheries emerges, you know, has a vital strategy to secure livelihood of these 30 million fishermen by providing new sustainable income sources, easing pressure on coastal stocks and driving economic growth in India's fisheries sector.
Correct. Now, we need to modernize and also ensure financing mechanisms for fishermen. How do we work that out?
To modernize fisheries sector and ensure effective financing mechanism for fishermen, already the government has implemented several flagship programs and strategy, notably under the Pradhan Mantri Matsya Sampada Yojana and supported by dedicated financial instruments such as Fisheries and Aquaculture Infrastructure Development Fund. So PMSSY, for example, the Pradhan Mantri Matsya Sampada Yojana supports creation and modernization of fishing harbors, cold storage, ice plants, fish transportation facilities like refrigerated trucks and insulated vehicles. It also promotes smart integrated fishing harbors and also use of artificial intelligence, IoT, online auctioning. It's there. All this has been provided, supported under this wonderful, beautiful scheme.
Mm-hmm.
And fishermen are definitely taking advantage of this, and they have turned around their lives using this scheme, you know, with the help, with the support of this scheme.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also this fund, you know, Fisheries Aquaculture Infrastructure Development Fund. This fund provides concessional loans and financial assistance to eligible entities, including state governments, cooperatives and fishers, resources for infrastructure development and operational improvements. And there is also government in a big way promoting formation of fish farmer producer organization and cooperatives to organize fishermen for better access to finance, markets and technology, enabling collective growth and bargaining power. So all these are already in place.
Lakshmiji, how do we find a balance between the fisheries industry and ecology?
Absolutely. Balancing the fisheries industry with ecological sustainability is essential to ensure long-term viability of fish stocks.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't just over-exploit and finish off the stock, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Protect marine ecosystems and secure livelihoods depends on fisheries, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sustainable, for example, we have already in place certain measures like implementing scientifically designed fishing bans, such as the uniform 61-day monsoon fishing ban is there. And this helps fish stocks to regenerate. That 61 period helps, you know, where you don't go and fish.
Right.
So prohibiting destructive methods like pair trawling, discouraging juvenile fishing are also important. Techniques like installing artificial reefs and practicing sea ranching to increase fish availability, habitat restoration and sustainable resource use. So these are certain measures, you know, which can be taken. The report provides a three-phase strategy till 2033.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the steps the government should take in the policy changes it should make? The first phase, 2025 to 28,
mm-hmm.
foundational reforms, regulatory framework and infrastructure. In the second phase, that is 2029 to 32, for scaling fleet modernization and market access. And in the third phase, it's suggesting the government to go for global leadership and sustainability with 8,330 crore estimated investment, and also inclusive sustainable model like supporting fisher cooperatives and cluster approaches so that local communities benefit directly from the access to technology.
We have a Ministry of Cooperation, which is the youngest ministry in the government. And cooperatives have grown strength to strength in the agriculture sector, and in the other sector, we have GEM in place and so on. Are we also geared up for a similar model in fisheries, Lakshmiji?
See, fisheries cooperatives in India are well established and play a significant role in empowering fishermen communities socially, economically and technically by organizing fishermen to collectively manage resources, access, finance and improve marketing. They are well organized. There are several multi-state cooperative societies especially for fishermen, such as Indian Fishermen and Fisheries Workers Cooperative Society in Kerala, Tuna Fishing Vessel and Fisheries Multi-State Cooperative Society in Tamil Nadu and others across Andhra, Telangana, Assam, West Bengal and more. But with the growing cooperative network and with the setting up of this new ministry and also the focused approach with the schemes and blue economy strategies emphasize strengthening fisheries cooperatives as a critical enablers. The fishery cooperatives are doing, and even the FPOs, you know, the fishery cooperative societies and the clusters are being, you know, also promoted.
Lakshmiji, what is the role of designated EEZs in promoting fisheries?
India's EEZ includes deep water beyond its continental shelf, where rich deep sea and offshore fishery resources are available. This is the area where the rich resources are available.
Hmm.
So when we say designated EEZ, it means that this recognition secures exclusive rights to explore, harvest and conserve these resources.
Right.
And which is estimated to be about 7.16 million tons per year. So much resource is there and we are yet to tap that.
Hmm.
And this also gives a jurisdiction that allows India to regulate, you know. When you have an area specified, this is my area, these are the resources and I have a right to regulate the fishing operations, including licensing, vessel registration, catch limits, gear restrictions and monitoring to ensure sustainable fishing practices. Everything we have control over that particular EEZ.
Right.
And also this EEZ status, when you say what's the role of EEZ, this status underpins strategic policies and investments to modernize fleet capabilities. We can invest. So fisheries within EEZ contribute substantially to livelihood, national income and exports. EEZ management aligns with the national blue economic visions aimed at generating employment, sustainable growth and cleaner marine environments.
Thank you, Lakshmiji, for enlightening us on India's blue economy strategy for harnessing deep sea and offshore fisheries. That's the report which Niti Aayog just released. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
You were listening to a discussion on Niti Aayog's report on India's blue economy. The participants were Lakshmi Devi, senior journalist, and Lalima Aneja Dang, anchor. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of Akashvani.
Money Talk.